Wrestling Omakase brings you a full-course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes, and my opponent today at ACW versus GCW is Fred Moreland. How are you?
I'm doing well. Acknowledge me, please. You know, I've been thinking, Tyler, you know, what with it being WrestleMania week and all this, and, you know, about just how rewarding long-term storytelling is. And, you know, sometimes you end up with a story where, you know, a guy that's, you know, a babyface comes up against someone that's just been really dominant and just took him out, you know, at the last step. And it was really a tough loss. And then, you know, the good guy comes back the next year and it's been fighting really hard to get back to that same spot. And wouldn't you know it, the same two people meet up and the babyface has a tough fight, but in the end overcomes and gets the win that they wanted all year long. And, you know, that's just a great story. And I got to applaud the Iowa Hawkeyes and Caitlin Clark and LSU and Angel Reese and everyone else for playing their part and paying that off. And this past Monday with a great game, and you love to see it.
Not only was it a great game, not only was it a cool long-term story, but it did 12.3 million viewers.
Yeah.
Which I think is more than any single NBA game over, like, it may have been more than every single finals game last year. Just absurd numbers. And let me tell you, in a world where men's basketball stars don't exist like they used to,
not in college,
that's just not a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. Women's basketball has really filled that niche well because you have big stars who are charismatic, who are boisterous personalities. Paige Buchers, she's from Minnesota. We got to kind of see her grow up and become this star. Now the world is seeing how good she is. Caitlin Clark is phenomenal. Steph Curry-like. Mm-hmm, and yeah. But she's kind of got that alpha mentality where she just, like, yells a lot. Like somebody like a Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. I'm not calling her Michael Jordan, don't get me wrong, but that kind of mentality. Cameron, the girl from Stanford, I think, Brink. Or is she?
Brink.
What? Cameron Brink. One, what a fantastic name for a girl in California. Cameron Brink. That name just rocks.
It's a good basketball name. Good sports
it
name.
It really is. Angel Reese, obviously. Haley Van Lith. She's obviously transferring from LSU now, but that she was an amazing player at Louisville before transferring. And then I can't remember her name, but the girl from USC who's just tremendous.
Oh, Juju.
Juju, yes, thank you. She's
I can't remember
awesome.
Her last name. Simmons, is that right? I can't. I'm not sure.
Connecticut and Tennessee, like just those two teams, outside of them, because you knew the Kara Lawsons, the Diana Taurasi's, the Candace Parkers back in the day, but the whole world didn't really know anybody in any of these teams. You go to a casual basketball fan now, they probably know who all of those players we mentioned are.
Yeah.
And it's cool how they filled that void that men's basketball left. And you know what? It's a good to really good to great product when you're watching it.
Yeah. You know, women's basketball has been steadily improving over the past 20 years, I would say, in part because like the NCAA didn't sponsor women's basketball until like I think it was 1983, which is wild to think about. And I didn't really intend to make this a women's basketball open as much as a sly nod towards, you know, the whole Cody Roman Reigns discourse. I do think it's dramatically improved over the past 20 years in quality. And funnily enough, once companies started marketing with the women's basketball and the NCAA figured out they could actually make money off of it instead of just being sexist, it's impressive how big of a deal it's become, how quickly, or this quickly, I should say. Because if you remember back when they did the pandemic tournament, I think that was 2021 because they canceled 2020, you know, the most notable thing coming out of it was the pictures of the weight rooms that they set up for the women that were like extremely crappy. And one of the players is like, look at this crap we got to put up with. And it's cool to see. And I do think the WNBA is going to get quite good soon. I mean, it already is, I think. But I mean, I think we're going to see it's very center oriented right now. And I'm hopeful that we'll see more guard play because that tends to be seen as more exciting. And I think we're going to see a lot less shitty sexism with it. But anyways, I was actually thinking about the Iowa LSU year over year thing and how it's actually a better version of the story that WWE's kind of trying to tell with Cody and Roman.
Oh, we have to talk about Cody Rhodes for a second. Okay. Fred.
Adrenaline in my soul.
There was the interview with Chris Van Vliet, and I'll give him credit. Cody refused to bury AEW. Not Chris Van Vliet. It was with Ariel Helwani. Helwani baited him multiple times trying to get him to bury AEW, and Cody refused to do it. He actually put them over. He put over Tony Khan. And the only thing that he really talked about was people that used Brandy as a scapegoat. That it kind of is what it is, but what we may talk about that more later, but I need to ask you about his bus fire, because he took two things out of that bus that wrestling fans will geek over. What were those two things, and why was one of them his NWA world title?
Yeah, I was trying to come up with something good for this, and I did not. So I
was the other his Funko Pop, his Bullet Club Funko Pop?
I have a Cody Bullet Club Funko Pop sitting over the desk right now, along with the Bucks and Kenny Omega. You know, I'm glad everyone got out of that okay. I'm hoping that the second one is the dog. Whose name I'm blanking on right now, but the Cody dog. He was
Pharaoh.
Yes, thank you.
To me, that read like things, not living beings.
Yeah, you know. I don't have a good punchline here though, so I'm just no anding with you.
Yeah.
I can't even think of a good joke. I'm sorry. I'm just like completely crap in the bed here.
It's because there's too much adrenaline in your soul. Fred can't think of a joke.
I am really bad at podcasting. Whoa.
All right. Let's kind of continue this on. It's interesting to kind of think about what he would have taken off that bus, because that's just a fascinating one.
He'll probably tell us it was like his father's polka dotted suit, you know, singlet or whatever, or trunks. I guess it was more just trunks in the top, but you know, something just to, so everyone can go, oh, Dusty always wanted to be champion in WWF.
Yeah. Did he? When were the fans begging for it? When did the fans want Dusty Rhodes to win the WWF title or the WWWF title? Hell, Dusty didn't even want to hold the NWA title.
I'm sure he was over opposite Billy Graham in those matches, but you know, no one's thinking about those. You know, they're thinking about the plumber run, the polka dot run, the sapphire run, and like he was never even close to that situation. He was brought in to get revenge on him for daring to book opposition. How dare he?
yeah, just an absolutely fascinating run there. And it just, we'll probably end up talking about WrestleMania here and there kind of throughout the show. Fred, there is plenty that we have to talk about. What do we have first on the agenda here today?
I think we got to talk about the releases first and foremost, because I think it's really interesting in several ways. So earlier this week, I think it was on Monday. Yeah, Monday. AEW announced its first ever batch of actual releases as the Hungry Cat makes some run-ins here. But, you know, there have been people that have been released before, whether it be for disciplinary matters like CM Punk being a very normal person or, you know, Jimmy Havoc way back in the day, or they released a couple of talent around the time of the pandemic. But otherwise, you know, the big thing with Tony Khan was that he was like, look, we will honor your contract. We signed you for 3 years. You will be here for 3 years. And I guess that has changed. Because on Monday, they released 2, 4, 6, 7, 10 people, one of which they've already done a takesy-backsies on, but we'll get to that separately. But the list was Fightful. Sean Ross Sapp reported seven of them. I can pronounce words well. So there was Dasha, the ring announcer, Stu Grayson, Jose the assistant, Jorah Joel, I think is how it was pronounced. It's telling that I don't even know how to, you know, 100% not sure on how to pronounce the name. Gravity.
He's from Planet Jarrett, so I get it.
Yeah. Gravity, Slim J, and Parker Boudreaux. And then PW Insider added reports of the boys, so Brandon and Brent Tate, of course, the Dalton Castle associates, and then Anthony Henry, who broke his jaw a few weeks ago in a match with Brian Keith on an indie show. Now, before really addressing the individuals, I want to talk about the fact that people were cut at all in this manner, which I found very surprising, given, once again, how we've talked in the past about how I think one of the selling points of AEW is, barring some extraneous circumstances, you know, legal issues in the case of BJ Whitmer, or personal issues in the case of Jimmy Havoc and CM Punk.
Yeah.
I
think they even let Havoc finish out his deal.
I thought he got cut, but I'm not sure.
They helped him. They got him into rehab, and then they just never had him back.
Yeah. Everyone else was a contract expiry situation. Like Joey Janela's contract expired. He wasn't brought back. Senecas, their contract expired and they weren't brought back. You know, so on and so forth down the line. You know, Cody Rhodes made the choice to go to WWE at the end of his contract. Tony Khan actually declined to pick up an option so Cody could leave when he wanted out at that time. And what a smart move by Cody, by the way. It's, you know, up to this point, you know, in the almost 5 years of the company, I think it is, technically 5 years since they did start base cut more or less on New Year's Day, 2019. They just didn't start really running shows for several months after. We actually have air quote real releases where it's just cost cutting. And I think, you know, I think that it's interesting to me, and I'm not sure it was the best idea in the sense that, you know, you look at these names and how much could you really have been spending on the Tate boys, you know, or Parker Boudreaux or Gravity, right? Like, just do you think these guys are making $100K a year in AEW?
No, but I also think that there's more to these releases than we currently know, Fred.
Maybe, yeah.
Let me kind of walk you through my thought process here. The only person on that list that felt like any kind of a regular was Dasha. Backup ring announcer. So to me, she would be the only one. Maybe Jose the assistant, but even he wasn't exactly a super regular either.
He hasn't been around for a bit, but he was a regular for quite a while there, I think. But it's been a bit.
Here's my theory on these contracts. I don't think it was, we're just going to cut to cut. I think it was strategic for the talent or cause or a request. So I think even though public perception is going to be that AEW cut people, it's over. I don't think that Tony Khan just decided, hey, we're just going to cut people. I think it's a little bit more strategic than that. I think there's more to the story. Like a guy like Parker Boudreau probably wasn't able to just take indie dates whenever he wanted, wherever he wanted, and he wasn't getting any work in AEW. So there's a high likelihood that he might have asked for his release, but that part of the story wasn't released if that was the case.
I'm going to push back here.
What?
I'm pushing back here because in the media call on Thursday, Tony Khan said that basically you have to make tough calls sometimes, and he plans to be very aggressive going after top talent in a continued expansion effort. And in order to do so, he said he needs, and this is a quote from F4W, that you need, quote, a war chest and to keep an eye on the budget. So he certainly didn't make it sound like in general that these were largely because of requests or anything else.
Okay. Interesting.
Now, the two people he did mention is Anthony Henry is being brought back once he heals from his jaw surgery, from that broken jaw. And secondly, he said that the Tates specifically no-showed a bunch of shows and that they were cut due to that. Now, one of the Tates got on Twitter and refuted that or denied that, I guess I should say. Mm-hmm. But
just said stay tuned, whatever the hell that means.
Sure. People in wrestling, if you want your side of the story to get out, you need to actually approach someone in wrestling media to do that for you, or else just post it on Twitter.
Yeah,
you can't just vague post and be like, well, actually, that didn't happen, and then not provide any further details. You know, if you want your side of the story out mm-hmm. there, you got to get it out there somehow. You can't just vague post and move on, you know,
stop with this double eye emoji crap. Just say something. I think Tony Khan's quote refuted that point, but I still wonder, like, AEW still has control over these guys, and they still have control over where they work, when they work. And you know what? I wonder if there's something in the contract with a guy like Anthony Henry. We can talk about the optics of it. He paid for Mark Davis's surgery and rehab, but didn't pay for Anthony Henry's. And we can talk about those optics all day. I wonder if there's something in the contract where if a guy gets hurt like that in a show that they can void out the contract. And you can say, oh, that's scummy. That's not how AEW talked about how they were going to run their business when they started. Those are all fair points. But, you know, it would be different than a cut that a contract voids with a major injury outside of the AEW bubble. I'm trying to understand all of the points with the cuts, because I think there's more to it than just, oh, AEW broke their word. But I also think they broke their word.
Yeah, let's not kid ourselves. Like, they could have perfectly good motivations to do that. But I do think they went back on what was something that he said a lot of times very loudly and proudly. He had his chest, you know, just puffed out every time he said it. He was like, we do not cut people. And I thought that was an advantage they had in negotiations when it came to like head-to-head competition for talent.
Now, I will say this, Fred. Not one of those was any form of pushed act. Not one of them was probably on a full-time contract, except for maybe Dasha. So if you look at it from that perspective, you can still, as AEW, go to the bargaining table and be like, well, hold on, you guys cut people. Well, you're on a full-time contract. We don't cut full-time contracts. We cut per-day contracts and super part-time contracts. We don't cut people like you. So even though public perception may be, hey, we're cutting, you can still work around it. And is it going to be as powerful? No. But the whole idea of who got cut and everything is just fascinating.
Yeah, because it is very interesting. But
nobody is going to be missed from that group, except I would argue Anthony Henry. Anthony Henry with the Workhorseman. Workhorseman's a great act. I would love to see them get a mid-card push, honestly. Yeah. Like JD or Drake. Like just
tag rocked. Champs and Ring of Honor, you know, would be
JD Drake looks like the 40-year-old farmer that you see in a small town bar, population 135. Like, and he moves way too good for his size. Like, I want to see more of that dude. I don't care if he looks like a milk truck. I want to see him.
And Henry's really good too, I think, in the ring. I do think that they have, you know, something. I don't think they're like a main event act, but I think they could definitely be a good mid carders, like you said, or good Ring of Honor main eventers or upper carders.
They're the guys you build up for a TV tag team title shot. You give them 20 minutes and you're going to be happy with the result.
Yeah. I don't really foresee any of these releases, again, outside of that, really affecting their TV too much. The second most, I would say, other than Dasha, who, you know, was a pretty regular presence, but, you know, could, you know, let's face it, is the kind of person that, you know, you could find someone else to do what she does. And I don't know if he'd necessarily lose a whole lot. But the Tates, the boys, was interesting in that I think a match tonight for the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, that isn't really a pay-per-view, is Dalton Castle against Johnny, whatever he's going by right now. Changing name back from Johnny Bloodsport.
Johnny insert promotion here.
Yes. For what was originally planned to be for control of the boys. And then they've been deboyed. Now they could just use indie guys in that role. But, you know, the Tates were always the real boys. And it's just interesting that they're gone right ahead of that match. But yeah, I mean, if you go through the list, just in like a let's assess the talent kind of way, you know, Stu Grayson is a good guy, good worker, but he just didn't get used. His last match on TV was that Fight Without Honor six-man match between the Dark Order and the Righteous, which ruled. It was just done, you know, after it was done, like he got tossed in the vortex real fast. Jose the assistant is he's pretty good with Roosh and Andrade and everyone else, but like also I don't think he's, you know, we ain't talking about Don Callis or Stokely Hathaway here either, I hate to say. Jorah Joel, I forgot he existed. Gravity could be something one day, but he needs more reps than he's going to get in AEW.
Signing Gravity was a mistake for the career of Gravity.
Yeah, he needs to go back, not necessarily go back to Mexico, but he needs to go back to the Indies and just work four times
a honestly week. He should go back to Mexico.
Sure, yeah, but I mean,
he can do a bunch of lucha. Like, and I don't mean it as anything other than he should go do a bunch of lucha and get those reps under his belt. A lot of those indie guys in Mexico are really, really good. Mm-hmm. The indie scene is much, much, much stronger in Mexico than it is in the United States. And I think he would benefit so much by learning from those guys and just doing 2 to 3 more years on the Mexican indies. And then you could probably look at him as a mid-card guy in this company. It was a mistake to sign him. I'm glad he got paid and I'm glad he got opportunities, but you could just tell it was too early. It would be similar to signing Mascara Dorada right now.
Yeah.
Like Mascara Dorada. I think
Dorada would be better, honestly.
Well, he's still very sloppy, but some of the high end stuff is like, whoa. Yeah. Okay. You've got something here, buddy. But there's too much inconsistency behind it.
Yeah. Slim J, I mean, I'm not going to knock him as a worker, but it was obvious that like he was brought in to be a low card heel to start off with, and then never.
Who's brought in for the Ring of Honor reboot?
Yeah, and he was never going to go any higher than that. And Parker Boudreaux just was not prepared for TV a year ago. Didn't work much since anywhere. And look, he's kind of in a shit or get off the pot situation. He either needs to go like a year or two on the indies and just work really hard and figure out what he can do and how much he can improve, or just, I don't know, need to move on, you know, because he looks like $1 million and does not work like it. So it's going to be tough for him, I think.
You know what you should do? You should send him out to like Defy or Deadlock or Inspire, West Coast Pro. Send him to one of those really high-end professional indies.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, Chris, you know, can you just build him up?
Yeah.
Can you just, like, you don't have to, like, hyper-push him. Just get him to be a good worker. Get him comfortable. And then I think you could bring him back, and he could potentially be, like, a big monster for you. But the problem is with some of these bigger guys, and I think it was Lance Archer that said it, and when you look at the Lance Archer's career, I think it tracks. Now, Parker Boudreau is a different type of big guy than Lance Archer. But it took him like a decade, and he said the same thing. It could take you like a decade to really figure out how to work like a big man. Mm-hmm. And I think Parker Boudreau needs to figure out how to work like a monster. Yep. And there's the infamous line, but I think it was during a World Tag League 2, where Gato just goes up to Lance Archer, more monster, more monster.
Yeah.
And there you go. And now everybody dies. Like, sometimes you just need somebody to be able to push you along. Parker Boudreau, it came up in my Facebook mentions the other day, Mike, on this date. I think it was 2016 when Parker Boudreau was visiting Auburn as a high school football recruit. Like, this guy's still young. At the oldest, I think he might be 27. Like, it's not like he's been around for a long time.
26.
Yeah, he's young. And the reason why he showed up is because he looks like Brock Lesnar. But you give it time, you get somebody who is willing to put in the effort to develop him. Like, and I think this raises a bigger question, Fred. The AEW system of development. Who have they actually developed? And who have they made into a big star? The answer, I think, is nobody. Wardlow, they built him up. They got him to a great spot, won the beat MJF, won the TNT title, and then they flubbed him. Hook feels in a really, really weird spot. Like, even some of the originals, Britt Baker was on the indies for a while. You can't count that. You can't count her the same way WWE shouldn't be able to count Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks wrestled in the indies for a long time. You're talking about, I want to talk about homegrown people that you're developing from day one. Hook is a homegrown guy. Same with Wardlow. Like, there isn't exactly a lot of track record here. It's the people that they're bringing in, high-end indie guys. The biggest success story, I think, would probably be Orange Cassidy, because on the indies, he was just a meme. He was a meme wrestler. And you know what? He made a lot of money. I remember laughing my butt off at those little weak kicks to the shins. I thought that was just funny. But they made him into a big deal and one of their bigger draws in the company. But do we have to have a real conversation about, can AEW actually truly develop talent? Or are they somebody who's just going to polish you off and you're already a star? Like, I think that's now that we're 5 years into the company, you can actually have that conversation now.
Yeah. And I think that, well, honestly, I don't know how much they're trying to develop their own guys right now, frankly. I mean, there is Nightmare Factory, but I think that's really unaffiliated. Like, there's just the QT and Dustin both work here, but it's not like an actual feeder program or anything. It's just a separate thing they do. I don't know that there, you know, are too many guys that they're really trying to build up like that. And it's not like WWE, where they have the whole Performance Center, dog and pony show. And, you know, are trying to tell you that they're building up all these guys, and practically everyone they've ever had come through out of it. I know there's exceptions. Please don't. Well, actually me. But most of them are just like, hey, Kevin Owens, we sure did teach him how to wrestle, huh? You know, that level of thing. And, yeah, I honestly think the biggest project for the Performance Center was to get Triple H over as successor for Vince. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's an interesting situation. They're obviously very happy, mainly building by bringing guys in and seeing what they can do with them to date. I do think that at some point they should probably, you know, tinker around a little bit with training some people. I've long thought that what they could do is they could sign high-level college athletes that aren't going to make it in the pros or aren't going to make it as professional athletes. They have an interest in wrestling. You know, you dig some for that. And sign them to one-year deals for $60,000 a year. You know, $100,000 a year, you can do that. Just a minor league deal, basically, and have them go train take them down to insert place here, whether it be the Nightmare Factory or something that Chris Hero would do or whoever the hell, and just like be like, look, you are going to learn to be a professional wrestler. We will do 3-month checkups. We can opt out of this deal after three, six, 9 months if it's not working out. And if it looks like you're going to make it, we'll keep you around. And we'll go full blast with your career. Use Ring of Honor as a proper developmental. Stop trying to pretend that it's ever going to be like a proper A brand, because it's not. And just use it to get young guys over. And like they're kind of like they're doing with Lee Johnson currently. I think that's one of the better things they've done with Ring of Honor recently, is they're trying to get Lee Johnson over with Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough because no one watches Ring of Honor. But, you know,
well, he's got a shot tonight.
Yes, he does. Against Kyle Fletcher. You know, I hope he does well. But yeah, I think that's kind of the situation in terms of developing talent. But yeah, I'm glad Anthony Henry's coming back. He's a tremendous talent in ring, and I do think he could be a valuable guy for AEW. I actually just checked, and the Tate Twins have released a statement using the Notes app. Well, let me see here. All right. We had planned to stay quiet publicly about our release to take nothing away from the biggest show of the year for Ring of Honor and Supercard tonight out of respect to the locker room that will be on it. Due to Tony's comments and the numerous fans, media outlets, friends, and coworkers that have reached out to us, that isn't an option for us anymore. We want to apologize to the Ring of Honor fans and to the AEW fans that were invested in the storyline and were expecting the both of us to be there. Oh, God, there's a lot more from this, but I'm just going to... God, this is like 3 tweets. So they were told that they were going to be included in the storyline, blah, blah, blah. Our scheduled date on March 16th, our travel was booked out of Nashville instead of our home airport of Knoxville. They then post some screenshots of stuff. So that's why they didn't make that show, they say. Let's see. That's like
Nashville, Knoxville. That's
3 hours.
A mistake by the office that seems somewhat plausible. It's not like Nashville in Memphis. Yeah. Nashville, Knoxville, very similar names, and they're both in Tennessee.
Yeah. So yeah, basically they're saying that one time was because of a mistake by the office. Now Tony Khan did make reference to there being multiple missed things. I don't know if that's the case or not. That's what Tony said. They don't address that at all really here. They just put some of the stuff with Nashville and Knoxville messages here. So I don't know, man. I'm just kind of like, whatever. Anyways, that's the releases, and that's kind of the things there. We're running out of time already because we're both on a short leash here. But there is one thing I want to, that's anything else you want to say on the releases? Cause I mean, it's just kind of like, well, I feel like this may have been a mistake because of the negotiating loss. But maybe some of them were mutual releases and it sounds like, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
I think there's too much context we don't have to truly be able to form any kind of concrete opinion, which I know is not exactly great podcasting, but it's clear that AEW lost at least a little bit of public perception leverage.
I think and bad timing, honestly, too.
Is it bad timing?
Yeah, it was the same day as CM Punk like bitching about them publicly, you know.
Okay.
You could argue that. I don't know strongly I feel that, but it's an argument.
I'm just not convinced it's anything other than I'm really not convinced of anything. I want more context. I want to know why these releases took place. If the Tate Twins missed dates, now obviously it's going to go back with a he said, she said. Mm-hmm. But like, are we really going to know? That's going to be a whole nother scenario. But some of these guys and girls, like, look, they were jobbers to jobbers level. Yeah. We're talking about the lowest people on the totem pole. Slim J said he still had to have a shoot job.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Look, they lost some negotiating leverage. How much? I don't really know, but it is what it is. And you know what? If they cut Miro tomorrow and Malakai Black, then we're going to have a bigger discussion about this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's going to be, oh, they're cutting real, like, notable talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%, but we're not there yet. And so I, you know, right now it's just kind of like, all right, whatever. In terms of like how it's going to affect AEW. Best of luck to all of them, of course. I wish them all nothing but the best. It's not like I have beef with any of them. I just don't think most of them were really going to add too much. Okay, other quick hitters. It looks like that the Ring of Honor call was more or less just fine. Tony Khan did not comment on when the exclusive negotiating window with Warner Brothers Discovery for their TV deal is. He didn't say when it was coming up, so, you know. Yeah, he said it's easier to work with Stardom now that Rossi Ogawa's gone. So,
yeah.
News. Ortiz had successful surgery on his pec, torn pec. He said he just tore it from a clothesline. So he said he's expecting to be out about 4 months. So we'll get him back in late summer, it looks like.
That's the thing. Like, people talk about how AEW is so dangerous. People tear muscles doing basic things. Wrestling is still dangerous no matter how you look at it. And, dude, a clothesline? That sucks.
Yeah, just bad luck. Matt Cardona appeared on Collision, a show I have not watched yet because it's been a busy week and I've been covering WrestleMania weekend, buddy. And
That was
it was a good match, though.
The first match of the Cope Open, it was good. I thought it was interesting that was the first match.
Yeah.
Edge versus Zack Ryder.
Yeah.
But I like what Cardona is doing with his career. He's kind of like, you can kind of pop in and out with at any point, and it's really not that big of a deal, even though he has been telling like a long-term story throughout the course of his indie run. But he became a deathmatch wrestler. He's reinvented himself because, you know what, he's got his toy podcast and stuff with Brian Myers. He just loves this stuff, and I think popping in on AEW shows every so often, I think rocks. Just minimal exposure, come in, do a spot, leave, come back later on. Because remember, he did that five appearance contract with AEW during the pandemic when he was doing stuff with Cody. That's perfect for a guy like this. Pop in, do a match, leave. I like it.
Got myself muted. Yeah, it's smart for him. And I'm glad that it seems like he had a better outing than like the couple he had way back with Cody a few years ago that were just very like, well, yeah, okay.
He's learned a lot outside of the WWE bubble, and I think that's what made this match as good as it was. I gave it 3 3/4. I enjoyed it. Like, look, it's not special, but these Cope Open matches are going to be like the Cody Rhodes Invitational matches, the Open Challenge ones when he was the TNT champion. Just go out there, give a guy a shot, have good matches. Hell, they got one of their biggest stars, Eddie Kingston, and Ricky, and another one, and Ricky Starks, by having these matches. Get, you know what? Bring in Speedball. Let's do Speedball versus Copeland. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of Ricky Starks, he had an injury scare on Collision. Looked like he did something possibly to an elbow, but he says he's fine. So that's good news. And that's more or less the news of the past week. I want to talk to you briefly about Dynamite, because again, this is our speed edition of the show. Just like, we're going to post this on Twitter. Please don't post this on Twitter. There were two really good matches on that show, and I don't want to talk about them because I want to talk about the bad one, which was Billy Gunn and Jay White.
Oh. And
as I understand it, you somehow made the strategic decision to not watch Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson's matches off of that episode, but you sure did watch Billy Gunn and Jay White.
I didn't make any strategic decisions. I started a new job on Monday. It's been chaotic. Plus, we have two dogs who can't be in the same room together. It's been an incredibly stressful few weeks. So I caught the back end of this. I did not actually see most of the match. I saw the post match.
Oh, buddy.
Look,
the match wasn't any better.
You gave Billy Gunn his moment. Now he needs to F off. And it's not a Billy Gunn problem. Billy Gunn's getting booked. He's taking the money and he's performing. But look, this isn't Sting. This is half of the smoking guns. Let's move on here.
Oh, buddy. I'm not moving on from talking about this match, though, because this match was
stunk.
Atrocious. One of the worst I have seen on AEW television. Basically, the structure of the match was Jay White, former IWGP World Champion and ostensibly a rather high card guy in AEW, just got his ass beat by 60-year-old Billy Gunn for an entire segment of the show. I am not joking. That is no exaggeration. The entire pre-commercial aspect of this match was just Billy Gunn beating the hell out of Jay White and Jay White getting nothing. It was just Jay White selling in the ring. Fell out of the ring. He brawled into the crowd where Billy Gunn just beat his ass. Billy Gunn beat him up back to ringside. We finally got a commercial and he just controlled him through the commercial break as well. Picture in picture is a threat and not a promise when it's Billy Gunn doing his offense on Jay White in half the screen. And then Jay White finally got a comeback of sorts with the after the break, but he went right back to eating a big side slam and he eats two famassers, and the finish is Jay White just low blowing Billy Gunn because we cannot beat Billy Gunn in the year of our Lord 2024. What are we doing? There's a time and a place for DQs, but this is completely unnecessary. Billy Gunn is the third guy in a babyface group that has been losing popularity for over a year now. And he can't do a job for Jay White. Come on now. Let's be real. It is. This was awful. And then I understand that Jay White is a piece of crap heel. He's supposed to show his ass. That's his job. But there's got to be a better way than getting owned by Billy Gunn for felt like 12 minutes. And then also afterwards having to slither out of the ring so he doesn't get killed more by baby faces.
This sucks.
It sucked, my man. It sucked real bad.
Very, very bad. I want this off my television. You know, the best thing to do with this entire storyline is to throw it in a canyon and drop some dynamite into it. Just blow it up.
Light the fuse.
Break the rules.
I do not know. I mean, it's kind of a... I mean, I know why the Acclaimed have been super cold compared to where they were like a year and a half ago is because they've just been doing the same crap every time they're on TV. It's just the same shtick. It's all the, you know, scissor me daddy ass and all that. And then they don't really have interesting feuds. They don't have good matches because so many of them involve Billy Gunn, who is just a lead weight to match quality these days.
Now, I will defend these guys initially. The scissor me daddy ass stuff was incredibly over.
Yes, it was.
Four or 5 months.
And then they ran that shit into the ground. And it still gets reactions, but I mean, it's not the same. They are not as over as they once were. And they, you know, this Bullet Club gold storyline was a decent idea, felt like a start, but I just feel like it's not been working to get the baby faces over. If anything, you know, I would say that Jay White and the Guns have benefited from it some, but not terrifically. And they're not going to benefit from it when it's, you know, I got to get killed by Billy Gunn. That's not doing business. So I don't know, man. This stunk. This was an atrocious segment. But
you know, it wasn't an atrocious segment. Let's talk about something better.
Sure.
How cool was that Willow Nightingale interview?
Oh, she's a super baby face. And that was a great promo.
It was a great promo. Mercedes came out and sounded like a robot. but that's, she's going to become sound more natural in time. My big thing was the presentation, Fred. It felt like a modern version of a Mean Gene Oakland WCW.
Yeah, no, I like that. I love that, actually.
I loved it. It felt a little odd how the promo was constructed, because it felt like it could have been better if, you know, they could have more of the camera in the, or the crowd in the background, or they were in the ring. But the uniqueness of the shot, the style, I thought was really cool. And Renee, you can use in so many different facets. I really dig it. Like, this whole thing worked. Stretching out Monet's wrestling debut, theoretically, until Double or Nothing kind of blows. Kind of sucks. Like, look, Punk was a different one. His Dynamite debut in the ring took a couple of months, but he wrestled on pay-per-view, and then he wrestled on Rampage like 3 or 4 times, and then he wrestled on Dynamite. I think that methodology made a lot of sense. You got to have her debut at Dynasty, right? Even if it's just a tag, you got to do something here. You got to get her in the ring. And like, hell, Julia's a free agent. Just bring in Julia and have them wrestle for 20 minutes. Who cares?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. But
no, yeah. But like, you get what I'm saying. They need to have her in the ring wrestling soon rather than later.
Yes, I agree. Because that is easily the best thing Mercedes Moné does is wrestle. I mean, she comes across like a star. She's good at carrying herself like a star. She's not a great promo, and she has not been a great promo so far. And frankly, the way she's been cutting these promos, I'm wondering if they're going to just turn her heel in like, you know, 3 weeks or something, you know. Because she just comes off like a natural heel, and that's always been kind of her thing. But I feel like it. Putting her opposite, I understand why you would, with Willow being in the match that caused the injury. I understand why you would put them opposite each other. But I feel like Willow is such a natural babyface that, you know, Mercedes Moné just naturally is going to feel like the heel against her. And I feel like that's going to be a minor problem for them. They're going to have to figure out. But it's, you know, it's an interesting situation. Definitely one to keep an eye on. I don't think it's going to end up like Paige, where not only is she, do they have to turn her heel, but she just isn't over or isn't a difference maker. I do think Mercedes will remain a difference maker. I just, it's kind of getting to the point where it's like maybe they should have just brought her in as a heel. Because it feels like we're already on her path there. We're going to do a turn like 5 weeks in before she has a match. And it's kind of like, shouldn't she have just come in like a heel and just big time everyone? But I don't know. I can definitely see arguments against that too. And let's be clear. But yeah, I mean, that was a very interesting segment in a lot of ways. Willow knocked it out of the park. I thought Stokely, look, I know Stokely's rep, and I enjoy Stokely very much on Twitter. He's obviously a witty and smart guy. He's a funny guy. But I think that, and it's not entirely his fault, let's be clear, I think he has not really succeeded on AEW television yet. But I think that he cut his first great promo when, after Willow did her babyface promo, Stoke came in and cut a whole ass babyface promo to put her over even more. I thought that was easily the best thing he's done on TV. Now, that's because he was with the Firm, which was rudderless from day one, and then just kind of disappeared to be the Ring of Honor authority figure in a promotion that doesn't really have storylines, or at least like more than two storylines. But I think that he knocked it out of the park. And if we're going to finally get the Stoke that I was promised as a guy on TV, let's go. Because he rolls, he's got the tools, I can tell, but he just hasn't been doing it yet. And, you know, they haven't found a way to utilize him to the maximum ability. And if we're getting that now, finally, then I'm in. You know, let's do this.
God, I love Stokely, man. It would be great if Mercedes had a mouthpiece. I don't think she needs one, but I think it could help elevate her right away while she gets comfortable in a new environment, while she gets comfortable with less structure, with more freedom, and understands the little things about being a great character. I thought this was good.
I have an idea, and that idea is that you know, you could have Stokely and possibly Chris, because I think Chris is turning heel. You could have those two stab Willow in the back, help Mercedes beat her, and then you got yourself a heel group there with two good workers, and Chris can be the you know, the lackey, for lack of a better term. She's, you know, quite good to be a lackey, but obviously in that case she'd be the number two to Mercedes, and you got Stoke as the mouthpiece. And you got Willow as the wrong babyface wanting revenge. I think that's easily something that could happen in the next few weeks. But, you know, it all remains to be seen. I feel like that's a really lame thing to say on a podcast about pro wrestling. But I don't feel like there's a clear... What I'm trying to say is I don't think there's a clear direction for where they are going with Mercedes. And they could easily just go with a Mercedes super babyface push. I continue to think it's odd that she's coming in and chasing, or at least in the picture for the TBS championship. Having her, you know, betray Willow would be one way to kind of cycle out of that and then have Julia go off and feud with whoever. But I mean, I don't think you can obviously put Mercedes opposite Toni Storm right now, because Toni Storm is just, you know, Steamboat Toni. Look, I was starting to think it was turning around a little bit with the Deonna Purrazzo feud, and at some points there were some good segments, and I'm not saying it's as bad as what, like, the first few weeks when it felt really like out of place, but I still think, you know, and she's been cycled down a little bit this time around too, let's be clear, so that's part of it. But I don't think that she's continued establishing herself as a, you know, as a full-fledged gimmick that is working in AEW. I've enjoyed the little bits they've done on Dynamite that I've seen, but I, at the same time, nothing is like, this is who should be the top of your women's division, even though she has the talent to do that. It's not a question of talent.
It's never a question of talent, but it's about getting her in the right positions to succeed, and I just... Man...
There's been a little, fair bit in AEW over the past year or so of having great talent and them not being in the right position to succeed.
Yep. We'll kind of see how that goes. I'll give Tony Khan time. I'll give him grace to make this work. I also think, like, the TV ratings people are going to just panic about. One, people are just watching less television. Two, they have all these big names, but they have to establish them as big American television stars. Like, that's the thing. And they're getting there. It'll come. It's not there yet. And that's okay. They're still, like, third on the night. As long as that remains consistent, the numbers fluctuating, like, I think it was 714 and a 0.23 this past week. That number I don't care too much about, because they were third on the night. Now, if they dropped to 15th on the night, then we have some problems.
Yeah,
but sure, they're drawing the majority of the audience. And if they're drawing the majority of the audience, I don't care about the rest of it. I just don't.
Yeah, it's not a situation either where, you know, you got this show and, you know, it's either dribbling off a ton of viewers, because it's really not. It's, you know, trended down a little bit the past couple weeks, but it's not a disaster or anything. But at the same time, you know, it's not a situation where you can put Mercedes Moné on TV and pop the ratings week over week by like 30% or anything. You know, this she's not CM Punk. CM Punk was a very rare occasion. The number of Punk stars that are as big as Punk, as over as Punk, especially after being gone for years and years from wrestling, are non-existent. You know, the only thing that would be, and it's not comparable, it would be beyond it, but was if they got The Rock to come in without going to WWE first, which obviously is not realistic, but and that's it. That's the entire list. Because there's no one that's been gone that long, it would make a difference. That's a big star. Other than, like, you know, guys that are retired and aren't going to be difference makers at this point in time.
You know, it'd be a great difference maker in AEW. Mm. Tetsuya Naito.
Well, look, we don't need to just stomp down the New Japan into paste at this point. I mean,
look, New Japan's in a rough spot, but almost every time they've been in a rough spot, they get out of it. So I trust that this next generation, they're going to get them in spots to succeed. And I think John Moxley's going to win the title next weekend at Windy City Riot, but that's me.
One to keep an eye on. That should be a fun match, too.
Absolutely. This is going to be a little bit more of an abbreviated episode because we know WrestleMania weekend is going on. Fred, let's. I have not watched any WrestleMania weekend stuff because I've been I'm neck deep into the NFL draft. What have you seen that is a must watch so far, and what do you think is going to be a must watch moving forward for everybody that's listening right now?
Boy, that's a good question. Good couple questions. First one, what is must-watch that I have seen? I have watched two shows, and I reviewed them for the site, voicesofwrestling.com. Defy Wrestling's Can't Deny It and Tokyo Joshi Pro's Live in Philly. I will tell you, and this may be part of like them being the two 11 a.m. shows, I can tell you that neither of them had anything that I would consider a must-watch.
Really? Not even the Defy show is really good top to bottom.
It did not deliver that way. Maybe I was a little grumpy that day, but they did have the BMF Battle Royal with Chef. And, you know, okay, so you hear that and you're like, big meaty guy slapping meat, right? You know, that's going to be what it is. And it started with Galina Del Mall and Luke Jacobs. And Luke Jacobs is a very good wrestler. And Galina Del Mall is a good wrestler who is massive as hell. He looks like he's lost some weight since last year, but he just is a tank, right? And then the next dudes out, I think they had eight people in total. So between the first two and the last two, which were Ricky Knight Jr. and Schaff, and both of those guys are very good, and I don't know why you would put these guys in a BMF Battle Royal, are Charles Crowley, LJ Cleary, Shoto from DDT, who I'm not knocking, Gene Money. Those are the guys. And it's like, so we've got two comedy guys, a third guy that is halfway to a comedy guy in LJ, and Shota, who is like a decent DDT mid-carder that nobody knows who he is. And it was just atrocious. And they should have just had it be like Schaff versus Galina, maybe added Ricky Knight and Luke Jacobs to make it a four-way. But this was bad. I hated that match. Everything else kind of under-delivered. The opener with the Bollywood Boys against Michael Oku as a sub and a man like Darice was just... It felt like it went 40 minutes when it was only 15, which is never a good sign. The two highlights on the Defy show that I will recommend to people was there was Chris Brooks and Kid Lykos against the Moonlight Express and Mike Bailey and Mal. And that was a very good match that I hoped would be great, but was not. That went 3 3/4 on my scale. And then there was a decent trios three-way between C4 XKC, which was the C4 tag team of Cody Chune and Guillermo Rosas, and Casey Navarro against the Sovereign, Evan Rivers, Judas Icarus, and Travis Williams, and allegedly Team Dragon Gate, Ho-Ho, Loon, KZ, and Chune Skywalker. Now, I say allegedly because I am not entirely sure Ho-Ho Loon even stepped in the ring. I was told he opened the match, but I don't know that I believe that. The gimmick on Dragon Gate shows is that Ho-Ho Loon will do an opening match, and then he'll appear instantly on commentary out of breath. He would not have been out of breath getting over on commentary. He would have been fully winded. He would have been 100% oxygenation, ready to go. Shun Skywalker worked a little bit and KZ like was in the ring at one point. I will say that the Sovereign trio looked really good, and in fact the announcers broke the news that Judas Icarus and Travis Williams signed with the TNA, and I hope they get a proper push there. And the C4X KC team, Guillermo Rosas is a, you know, pretty good hoss, and Cody Chune looks like he's going to be something, and KC Navarro is perfectly good. I will give credit to those guys. And over on Tokyo Joshi Pro, I mean, it wasn't a bad show. I like that show better because there was nothing outright bad on it. But at the same time, you know, the opener I thought was the best match, Risu Endo and Suzumi against Yuki Ano and Zara Zocker, who I had never seen before, has apparently been wrestling for a year and instantly popped off the screen like, oh, she's going to be something. Someone needs to sign her. Ideally, she'd work on the indies for 5 more years and perfect everything. That's not going to happen. If she's not like reached out to by AEW or WWE by the end of the weekend after that performance, I'd be mildly surprised. She looks like she could be a future star. I'm not going to guarantee it, but she's got that ability. And then the main event was Maki Ito and Miyu Yamashita against Miyu Watanabe and Riki Tatsumi. I will say that in another setting, this could have been like flirting with 4.5 stars if they worked in a certain way. They didn't. They did a fair bit of shtick. There was some crowd brawling that just didn't really do anything for me. And then there was a nice closing stretch. And I thought that came out to like a 3.5 star match. You know, but it was definitely like, it's currently 12:30 p.m. in Eastern Standard Time. We're half the way across the world, and, you know, we're not going to outright kill ourselves. If they ran this match back on a big Tokyo Joshi Pro show in a few months in Japan, it'd be much better. And that's kind of where I am with everything. So
there you go. Nice breakdowns of Defy and Tokyo Joshi Pro. Don't forget, Voices of Wrestling covers WrestleMania weekend like nobody else. Show reviews and previews for everything going on this weekend. And if you have the opportunity, please go subscribe to the flagship Patreon, voiceofwrestling.com/Patreon, patreon.com/voiceofwrestling for audio reviews of most of the big shows this weekend. Thank you guys very much for joining us. We are going to be back next week. I don't think next week we'll be talking about the full Dynasty preview, but the Heat Check will be coming back in a couple of weeks. And we'll also do at some point some kind of retrospect talking about the 5-year history of AEW, kind of where we were and where we are now and where we're going. Thank you guys so much for joining us. 5-star reviews, please and thank you. Like, comment, subscribe, all the fun things. Look, you hear it on every podcast. It means more to us and our growth than you think. Please go ahead and do that. I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Thank you very much for joining.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.